What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
Hi there, it's Paul, and you're listening to What the Footy, the podcast that takes football fans behind the scenes. Here is what I have lined up for you today.
Today, we talk about influencers, but we're now talking street because, you know, it started off as pure performance, just performance, but all the influence of sport has now been on the streets. So people are now wearing sneakers, they wear tracksuits, and everything's so casual, which has become the influence of sport itself.
It's the What the Footy podcast. I hope you love it. Not like it, I hope you love it. Download, subscribe, rate and review, and tell a friend to tell a friend. Let's go.
Knew Sam Allardyce liked me, but I didn't know it was to that extent.
Imagine being a kid in primary school, now supporting Arsenal.
They're powerful people, and I think they need to recognise that, but then also they need to be represented the right way.
Sport in general is nothing without fans.
Based on, you know, one single source of revenue alone, that being the TV deal.
So winning the league, let's just win this to appease the fan.
How you doing today, Joe? You good?
I'm doing good today, yes, sir. As you know from Julie, the last couple of days I've been struggling with a cold, but fortunately it's only a cold. That's all it is. It's nothing more serious than that. But right now I think I'm through it and the right side of it. How about you, Paul? You good?
No, I'm good, thank you. It's Monday. Started off, went to the gym this morning, so my week started well. So I can't complain too much. We usually start off the show with this question, which is, what is football to you, a business or a sport, and why? But I'm going to flip the question for you, Joe. I'm going to say, what does Reebok mean to you and why?
What does Reebok mean to me? Well, it's like your child. It's like your baby. It's something that my brother, Jeff, and I, we started in our early 20s. And here we are now. I'm 87. So we're 50-odd years on from starting that company, which, you know, when you start a company, you've got good thoughts, you're excited, but to get to a number one, which we did, we got to a number one in the 80s and 90s, that number one sports brand globally, bigger than Nike, bigger than Adidas. So, you know, so what it means to me is a lifetime of really sort of being lucky, having a lot of fun, meeting a lot of people, and, you know, being involved in something that that I've been in love with. And when you meet all those people, because sport is really the future. It's now, it's entertainment. And so we've always seen this growth of sport. So Reebok has been my life.
No, that's super useful. And it obviously all started back, obviously before yourself and Jeff sort of launched Reebok in 1958, you started with your grandfather as well. And I think what's really interesting about how he sort of started it was by sort of making these products for future Olympic gold medalists and footballers as well. And he was kind of doing what today we'd call influencer marketing or sports marketing, but it wasn't obviously called that back in the day. Just sort of speak to me about obviously how he sort of started, what initially was, and then you and Jeff sort of taking it over and just kind of growing it and scaling it from there.
Well, my grandfather, not a big guy and not a good runner, but he was a member of an athletics club in Bolton. And he got the idea to put spikes in the bottom of his shoes after seeing his grandfather. His grandfather was a cobbler, repaired shoes, but also repaired cricket boots. And in those days, back in the 1880s, spikes in the bottom were in the bottom of cricket boots. And my grandfather obviously asked his grandfather, why did they put spikes in? And I'm pretty sure that the answer would have been to give them grip. If you're in a batting or if you're in the field, if you're bowling, you need a good grip. You're on grass, you don't want to be slipping. So he got the idea, why don't I put some spikes in the bottom of my running shoes, which he did. So that's why he's credited now with inventing the spike running shoe, that's the start, 1895. That's a long time ago. And he put spikes in the bottom of his shoes. And in those days, what he did, you start off making shoes for yourself, then you make shoes for your club mates, then you were making shoes for all the local athletes. And in fact, his business did become global, even in the early part of the 20th century. But he did this by giving shoes to people who were winning events. 1904, yep. Alf Straub broke three world records in one event in Glasgow. And that's incredible, three world records. And that's because grandfather, as an influencer, gave him shoes, as he did for a lot of other athletes. We have the film Chariots of Fire. Have you heard of Chariots of Fire?
I have, yeah. Oscar-winning movie, that, yeah.
Three athletes, Eric Liddell, Harold Abrahams, and Lord Burley. They all won gold medals. You mentioned gold medals. They all won Olympic gold medals in the 1920s. And those are the three athletes who were immortalized in that film. And, of course, the thing is that they won their gold medals in my grandfather's shoes. So they wore Foster's shoes in the 1920s. So this influenced, obviously, athletes. Today, we talk about influencers, but we're now talking street because, you know, it started off as pure performance, just performance. But, well, when we've gone through to the end of the 20th century, all the influence of sport has now been on the streets. So people are now wearing sneakers. They wear tracksuits. They were everything so casual, which has become the influence of sport itself. But like you say, my grandfather, he probably didn't even know the word influencer, but he was tremendous. I mean, and you talk about football because J.W. Foster's in the 1920s. We have a letterhead, and we've reproduced this letterhead. And there's 96 teams. Football teams, rugby teams that Foster supplied. And we're talking about Arsenal, Man United, Tottenham, Man City, all the top clubs of the day, and even today they're the top clubs, Chelsea. He supplied them all with football boots and training shoes. So I can imagine him now, take him 100 years on to where we are today. What would that company have been? Incredible. So he was incredible.
No, that's super useful to hear. And even just touching on some of the stuff that you mentioned there, that's a big thing that I speak to a lot of people on the commercial side within football, how we're almost seeing, whether that's football kit culture, whether that's what you mentioned, their trainers and sneakers, and that's now become part of streetwear and culture and fashion. When you started to make that sort of emphasis with Reebok into aerobics and athletics and sort of fitness, would you have imagined that shoes that you made for runners and people to almost kind of compete when would then become worn on the high street and worn on the catwalk and sort of worn in sort of everyday life?
Well, you know, people talk about luck and people say there's no such thing as luck. Well, I want to contradict that because, you know, they say it's just, you know, being prepared for when the opportunity arises. That's not luck. That's what you are. But, you know, for we'll say sport and athletics to transcend the way it has from being simple performance, now influencing street, there's got to be some luck to be there at the right time when that happens. So, it is incredible. We never thought that sport would become such an influence on everyday wear. And yes, you know, we started off making cycle shoes at Reebok. The reason is we didn't want to compete with Foster's, which by that time was being run by my father and uncle. So we decided we'd make cycle shoes. We soon got into athletic shoes and then athletic shoes and road racing shoes. And then, of course, in America came the big fitness drive where everybody wanted to go out running. So running shoes became massive. And a magazine, Runner's World, and Nike, they were there at the time, and they helped that movement really grow. Tremendous, absolutely. 10% of the Americans had started running by, I think, 1975, about 10%. And if you think at that time, 360 million runners, so 30-odd million were out there running. That's a lot of running shoes.
No, that's super useful. And just sort of in terms of building the brand and scaling the brand, I read one of the quotes in your book was the lifeblood of any business comes from the staff. Just sort of talk to me when sort of scaling Reebok, how important was strategy, culture, and building the right team and the right environment for people to thrive? How important was that to you in the business?
Well, again, we're very lucky to be in a business that you can relate to. You know, there are many things, maybe making pies or making cakes, whether you relate to that in the same way we could relate to sports footwear, where you've got athletes, top athletes wearing your shoes. And when you talk about then employing people, we didn't really need to employ people. We didn't need to go out. They just came. They wanted to be part of that culture. And we were so lucky that we developed a winning culture. And when everybody's happy, everybody wants to be part of it. But you need those people, the people who really wanted to become part. What you've got to avoid, and we didn't always manage this, but you have to avoid egos. We didn't want egos. People have got to become part of Reebok. Even today, not many people have heard of Joe Foster. Joe Foster, that wasn't important. The important thing was a brand, always Reebok. So it was always about Reebok, the brand. And that was, everybody then could become part of Reebok. And yes, we were very lucky. And of course, we got a lot of the right people, people who were excited to become part of a brand that was really growing. And of course, when we hit aerobics, you haven't mentioned aerobics, that's what took us into the stratosphere. We were growing nicely as a running brand, but we were well behind Adidas, well behind Nike. But when we hit aerobics, we became a woman's company because we supplied a shoe specifically, probably the first sport shoe specifically made for women. And that's what really, in a period of 5 years, we went from almost zero. We were actually a $9 million brand, which is not a bad size for a nice small brand, $9 million. But we went from 9 million to 900 million in under 5 years.
Wow.
It was nearly a zero to a billion.
That's pretty
You need a lot of people to do that.
Yeah, and just by you sort of mentioning having a lot of people, what was your sort of leadership style like, and how did you sort of interact with your staff as well?
Well, for me, I needed the American market. And when I got the American market, we got it because we designed a five-star running shoe, five stars. This was created by the magazine Runner's World. And once you got a five-star running shoe, everybody wanted it. So selling that, once we got that, we could sell easily. Reebok became a shoe that people were in demand in America. So for me, it was a question of saying, okay, now who leads America? Well, that was Paul Feyerman, because you need an American in America. You know, they know the market. They know the people. Getting the product in there. Now, Jeff and I had sort of built a company for nearly 20 years before we actually got into that market. And getting in was what I was chasing that for a long time. I needed just to get to America. I knew America was so big because every college, all universities, they had coach. And you could go to university on a sports scholarship. So it was so big. That was hitting the big market. So once I got America and Paul Feyerman, that's when we put a lot of accent on what they were doing in America. Then I started putting on the rest of the world distribution. So I was traveling all around the world, putting distribution on Japan, Australia, you name it, throughout all around the world, really. And so my job was to travel and to expand the whole network. Meanwhile, Paul Feyerman could concentrate on America. And of course, we had one great guy, Arnold Martinez. He's the guy that spotted aerobics. He spotted aerobics. His wife was going to aerobic classes. This is in Los Angeles. This is where it all started, in LA. And his wife was going to these classes, and he said she would come back home really sort of full of it. Wow. And he's saying, what are you doing? Frankie. Her name was Frankie. And she's saying, well, we're doing aerobics. And Arnold said, what the hell's aerobics? Ah, well, we're exercising to music. Fantastic. So Arnold went to see what this was all about. And all these women were wearing a sneaker. Some of them weren't even wearing any shoe. And this idea came to Arnold, why don't we make a shoe specifically for aerobics and specifically for women? So we only made the shoe on a woman's last, in women's sizes. And the women loved them. And when Jane Fonda went out and bought a pair of shoes for her exercise videos that she made, that was it. We just took off, just exploded. So it was a woman's shoe that really drove us to become number one. That's when we really, really grew faster than you can imagine.
And you sort of mentioned Paul Feynman there, and obviously Paul was sort of influential and sort of taking and sort of growing the brand over in America as well. And when you did sell the company as well, how easy or hard or difficult was that transition for you in terms of still being in and around it, but also still having a bit of a back seat as well?
I think for me, it was that I came to an agreement with Paul that Paul would concentrate on America and that I would put the rest on. And if I could build in America, that would influence, we're talking about influence again, that would influence the rest of the world, which it did. I mean, I'd been going to America to the NSGA show, that's the National Sporting Goods Association of America. I'd been going there for years, and I would meet everybody from all over the world. They all went to the NSGA show in Chicago. They all went because that was the influence. This influenced sport wherever. And the odd thing is that most of the American sports, basketball, baseball, American football, are all belonging to America. Nobody else in the world played those sports. And they didn't play soccer. Oh, we call it football. They call it soccer. That's why, unfortunately, football to them is American football. And so it's soccer as far as they're concerned. And we had tried to get football or soccer into America. But, you know, the spectators, people in America have been brought up with three major sports, basketball, baseball, and American football. And to get soccer into America was difficult. It wasn't in the, they hadn't grown up with it. You know, it's what you grow up with. And I don't, do you play anything apart from, do you play soccer? Are you into basketball, baseball, or American football?
My main sports are football and tennis.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but none of the three American games.
Not really, no.
No. So you can see that if somebody's really big now in baseball and wants to bring that sport to the UK, is there an audience? Do people want to go and watch it? We don't have any baseball diamonds in the UK, as far as I know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe so you can imagine how difficult it was to get football, or what they call soccer, into America. But America influenced the rest of the world on sports goods, which is amazing. So, you know, and really the one thing that brought all this to head was the Americans started going out training. All you needed to keep fit or to get fit was to get yourself a pair of running shoes and go out on the road. They started doing 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, marathons. And this is what really started the influencing. This is what really grew the sports goods companies worldwide. It was getting that emotion for football. They call it soccer, so it's always a bit difficult. The emotion for soccer in America now is big. But it's big as a woman's game. It's growing as a man's game, but it's big as a woman's game. Okay, the one thing that really brought us the growth, as I've said, is aerobics. And aerobics did travel. We could take that around the world. We got it into Japan very quick. Into Europe, we got it in there very quick. So for Reebok, for me, growing the brand globally really depended upon how well things were doing in America. And aerobics in particular, that's what really, really grew the brand.
Now, that's super useful. And I've read as well that in a previous interview that you did, you mentioned how when you started Reebok in 1958 with Jeff, you didn't look at football, because Adidas were the ones who were sort of really big and dominating into football. But sort of fast forward into the 90s and the 2000s, we sort of mentioned earlier off air, Reebok started to really grow its presence within football, sponsoring players like Thierry Henry and Andy Cole, and working with clubs like Liverpool and Man City. And I read recently as well that the new guys who've just sort of taken on Reebok, ABG, that they're trying to grow their presence in football as well. What do you sort of think about when you think about Reebok's sort of synonymous relationship with football and what it sort of means to football?
Well, I think that as we grew with aerobics, we also knew we couldn't just stay with aerobics. We had to become a sports brand, not just an aerobic shoe. So we got into the other sports. First was tennis. You know, we had Chang, I forget all the names, Flack and Seguso, but Chang won the French Open. And so we got into tennis, and that was great. But that was the first sport we moved into that was outside of American sports, because we got into American football. We were in America. I can't remember getting into baseball, but we certainly got into American football and basketball. And you've heard of Shaq O'Neal.
Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal.
The legend. Well, he was part of Reebok. So, and in fact, you mentioned ABG. He is part of ABG, because ABG, the CEO of ABG, when Shaq used to go and see him, because Shaq has 15% of the company. And so Jamie Salter, he said every time Shaq comes in here, the only thing he talks about, he starts talking about Reebok. And the last thing he's talking about when he leaves is Reebok. So he said, we've decided we bought Reebok. So they bought Reebok from Adidas, because the problem with Adidas wanted Reebok because Reebok were big in America.
Yeah.
And Adidas wanted to get bigger in America than they were. So they bought Reebok for a lot of money. But unfortunately, really, Adidas and Reebok are in the same playing the same goals, same games, same whatever. So Adidas, having owning Reebok, they didn't do anything with Reebok. So Reebok just slowly went down, down, down. Adidas grew, which is why they bought it. But really, Reebok became a bit of an embarrassment to Adidas. It wasn't really good, because Adidas didn't know how to run the companies separately. And they put them all together. They were in the same offices, the same warehouses, everything, the same salespeople were selling the shoes. So it wasn't doing Reebok any good at all. The time did come when they decided to sell. ABG bought Reebok. And now ABG are not really a brand company. They own 40 brands, different brands, whatever. They own 40 different brands. But Reebok is the biggest one they've bought. And I mean, they paid $2.5 billion for the company, and its revenues at the time were only about $1 to $1.5 billion. So that was a lot of money. But the difference with ABG is that they license brands. So they would, if you're a retailer or whatever, they would license you to use the brand. And so what they have, they've done this now with Reebok, but they're also having a central sort of ownership for Reebok. So everything's moved from the central that is still being sort of organized. I think it's called now Reebok Design Group, but they're starting to build a serious company again. And the good thing for ABG is that around the world, they have so many license agreements with retailers, big retailers, that now Reebok will come out of the shadows from Adidas, and they have done. And from being a $1.5 billion business, by the end of 2023, there'll be a $5 billion business, because the exposure of the brand now is such that you'll see it everywhere now. It will be everywhere, massively. So that's the good thing for Reebok. And I think what Reebok are doing, they're teaching ABG what to do about how a brand can really grow. And how a brand, you just don't take it over and just make it available. It's now got to become something bigger. And as you say, now ABG decide they want Reebok back into soccer, not football, back into American football, back into basketball. which is good because Shaq is part of that. So this is where ABG are growing. And I would suggest that by the end of this decade, that Reebok will be a $10 to $15 billion business. And everybody in America loves the brand because the brand grew so quickly and became the first real street brand.
No, I'd sort of echo that point as well, because I think ABG have done a really good job. I think they own the rights to Juicy Couture as one. I think they've done a really good job in terms of sort of elevating that brand as well back to what it used to be as well, which is super exciting. I end the podcast with this question, which is what the footy needs to change or happen within your space. So just asking you that question, what would you sort of like to see happen within the sporting goods industry and within the sort of sports manufacturing industry?
Well, I mean, I'd like to see Reebok get back to the number one spot. As far as I'm concerned, this is where we're going now. You know, we've got another opportunity, and we can change things in sport. You know, and it will change, because as we've seen from football pitches that we used to play on, I would play on when I was a kid playing football, get a good shower of rain, and all you've got is mud. I mean, now they play on pitches, they've got techniques now. You know, they are playing on grass, but you don't see mud anymore on football pitches. You just don't see it. Yeah, and this is not include synthetic pitches. That's different, but it's a different game on a synthetic pitch, and you know, that sort of grass can burn you if you slip on it, whatever. But regular grass is okay. So things have changed. You look at the football itself. The football now is very light. You know, the ones that Nat Loftus and those guys used to head. I mean, that ball became so heavy. So, you know, sport, not only will it change, it's growing. It's growing bigger and bigger and bigger all the time. More people are actually wanting to play sport, become part of sport, whatever it is. So, you know, I mean, where is it going? It's entertainment now. And, you can read books about, well, who's going to be employed in 50 years' time? You know, when we've got, well, AI to begin with is going to take a lot of things over. Robotics are going to take a lot of things over. Yeah, we're going to be doing more of this, talking to people via connections. When I started out, the only way I could get to America, I used to take a plane. I had to get on an airplane and go around the world. And that's why I was going around the world a lot. And funny enough, we're going around the world almost as much now with my book, Shoemaker. That is taking us around the world.
Yeah.
I wrote the book because people were telling me how Reebok started. I've stepped back from the day job, and I'm in Tenerife, and I'm reading now because, well, now we've got computers, now we've got smartphones, and people are telling Wikipedia, Google, this is how Reebok started. And no, it didn't start that way. And here's a photograph of Joe Foster. Well, he may have been called Joe Foster, but it wasn't me. So I had to put that straight. So I started writing the book. But it seems now a lot of people just seem to think it tells more than a story. It tells how an entrepreneur works, starting off two people, little money, and all the experiences we had. And it's so incredible that we would actually, well, I would write the book and people would want to read it because there are so many messages in there. So what's happening now is that we're invited all over. In fact, in next month, we're off to Panama. We'll be there for a week. And then back to back with that, we go to Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
So that's where we're going. And then when we come back in December, we're off to America again. So there's all these things, and we're just going, telling the story and selling the book. Get Shoemaker to become number one in America as a bestseller. So it's keeping us happy, keeping us excited, keeping us working.
No, that's brilliant to hear, Joe. But Joe Foster, founder of Reebok, author of Shoemaker. No, pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Sorry for the throat. It's still a bit sort of difficult, but we got through. We're okay.
Yeah, I hope you loved it. And guys, please, please, please remember to subscribe on your chosen podcast platform, to hit 5 stars as well. Appreciate the love every time. Hit me up and I'll be back in a fortnight for the next episode. Have a blessed week. Peace and love every time. Let's go.
What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
What the footy?
Knew Sam Allardyce liked me, but I didn't know it was to that extent.
Imagine being a kid in primary school. Now it's a foot in Arsenal.
Powerful people, and I think they need to recognise that, but then also they need to be represented the
football
right way.
Sport in general is nothing without fans.
Based on one single source of revenue alone, that being the TV.
Let's not win in the league. Let's just win this to appease the fans.